This is the weekly podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. Hello and welcome. I'm Natalie Pinchem, and I will be reading synopses of some of the articles published by the Journal of Neurosurgery on March 15, 2013. The topics of the articles featured in this podcast are vascular disorders, diagnostic and operative techniques, traumatic brain injury, and oncology. A prospective randomized phase 2 clinical trial to evaluate the effect of combined hyperbaric and normobaric hyperoxia on cerebral metabolism, intracranial pressure, oxygen toxicity, and clinical outcome in severe traumatic brain injury. A clinical article by Sarah Roxwald and colleagues. This is the first report on a randomized clinical trial combining hyperbaric oxygen and normobaric hyperoxia as a single treatment and comparing its effect to a control-treated group. Combined treatments significantly improved markers of oxidative cerebral metabolism in relatively uninjured brain tissue, but importantly, also in pericontusional tissue. Combined treatment also reduced intracranial hypertension and thereby decreased the therapeutic intensity of treatment of intracranial hypertension. There was no evidence of oxygen toxicity either in the brain or the lungs, and there was actual demonstrated improvement in markers of cerebral toxicity. Combined treatment resulted in a relatively marked reduction in mortality and improvement in favorable outcome, as measured by the Glasgow Outcome Scale score at 6 months. This improvement was significantly better than past clinical outcomes observed with either of the treatments used separately. The results of this study corroborate the preclinical findings that hyperbaric oxygen therapy, used in combination with normobaric hyperoxia, enhances cellular metabolism via increased intracellular oxygen, thereby improving mitochondrial function, which results in enhanced oxygen utilization post-treatment. Incomplete stent apposition in enterprise stent-mediated coiling of aneurysms, persistence over time, and risk of delayed ischemic events. A clinical article by Robert Heller and co-authors. The use of intracranial microstents has made it possible to treat wide-necked, complex intracranial aneurysms using stent-supported coil embolization. The Enterprise device is a closed-cell, self-expanding stent that is flexible and easily navigable to distal tortuous anatomy. In larger vessels with tight curvature, however, closed-cell stents, such as the Enterprise, have been previously shown by the authors to be prone to kinking and ovalization. This tendency, occurring primarily in larger vessels, such as the carotid siphon, leads to separation of the stent from the wall, resulting in incomplete stent apposition to the vessel wall. Incomplete stent apposition is clinically relevant because it is associated with periprocedural embolic events as detected by diffusion-weighted imaging on MRI. In this report, the authors followed a cohort of 50 patients treated using Enterprise stent-mediated coiling, of whom 44% exhibited incomplete stent apposition as detected by 3-Tesla MR angiography. Longitudinal MR imaging at follow-up revealed that most instances of incomplete apposition persist over time and do not disappear by involution or thrombosis. More importantly, Incomplete stent apposition was found to be significantly associated with delayed ischemic events, including transient ischemic attacks and stroke. In contrast, patients without incomplete stent apposition had no delayed ischemic events. Recursive grid partitioning on a cortical surface model, an optimized technique for the localization of implanted subdural electrodes. A clinical article by Thomas Peters and co-workers. Intracranial recordings with subdural electrodes are of great importance in certain cases of medically refractory epilepsy, where they provide unique insights both into the biology of epileptic networks and into normal cognitive functions. It is crucial to localize these electrodes precisely, with appropriate gyral labels, to enable integration with datasets from imaging modalities and to make surgical decisions. Imaging-based localization of subdural electrodes, such as that using radiography, computed tomography scanning, or magnetic resonance imaging, is prone to errors given the nonlinear deformations of the cortex underlying the craniotomy flap. The authors devised a strategy using three-dimensional mesh models of the brain to create accurate representations of the cortical surface and a subdural electrodes localization strategy using intraoperative photographs and a recursive partitioning technique on the cortical surface. Electrodes are much more precisely localized in this way, with mean errors of about half of those of traditional techniques. Additionally, the generation of three-dimensional pile mesh surfaces allows for the automated labeling of gyri and sulci, enabling localization that might guide surgical strategies and the mapping of eloquent regions. The visualization of sulci relative to implanted electrodes hints at the possible role of unseen sources in the generation of both epileptic and normal neuronal activity. Complex imaging features of accidental cerebral intraventricular gadolinium administration. A report of two cases by Nita Nayak and colleagues. Gadolinium-based contrast agents are commonly used in the setting of enhanced magnetic resonance imaging. These agents have negligible systemic toxicity when administered intravenously or at low doses within the intrathecal space, as in spinal myelography. However, at higher doses, these contrast agents can cause severe neurotoxicity. Instances of inadvertent administration of gadolinium directly into the cerebral ventricles are exceedingly rare and diagnostically challenging when encountered, as the neurotoxic effects on the cerebral parenchyma may mimic the radiographic appearance of more familiar infectious or inflammatory pathologies, especially confounding in the setting of recent neurosurgery. The authors present two separate cases of inadvertent intraventricular gadolinium contrast injection in patients after neurosurgery, along with a review of the subsequent computed tomography and magnetic resonance imaging findings by chronology, and a discussion of the pathophysiology of direct gadolinium neurotoxicity. It is hoped that increased awareness of this entity may hasten accurate diagnosis and prevent potentially devastating harm in patients after neurosurgery. Surgical outcomes in recurrent glioma, a clinical article by Jason Marshall Hoover and co-authors. Glioma patients increasingly undergo multiple surgical procedures, but the risks and benefits are not well defined. The author's objective in this study was to assess outcomes of surgery for recurrent intracranial glioma. They retrospectively reviewed cases involving adult patients with intracranial glioma undergoing multiple surgeries at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. The median survival was 76 months after the first surgery, 36 months after the second, 24 months after the third, and 26 and a half months after four or more surgeries. Neurological complications occurred in approximately 5% at first surgery and were increased with two or more surgeries to approximately 10%, though this did not significantly change in subsequent operations. In contrast, regional complications occurred in approximately 6% after first surgery and increased consistently with each subsequent procedure. Systemic complications were uncommon and did not predictably increase or decrease with multiple procedures. Despite these complications, performance status was maintained in over 90% of cases. The authors conclude that post-operative survival is relatively prolonged in this highly selected population, but complication risk increases with multiple surgeries. The largest increase in neurological risk occurs between the first and second surgery, although regional complication risk increases consistently with each operation. These findings may help counsel patients considering multiple glioma surgeries. Changes in temporal flow characteristics of CSF in Chiari malformation type 1 with and without syringomyelia. Implications for theory of syrinx development. A clinical article by Elizabeth Clare Clark and co-workers. This study investigates timing-related features of the spinal CSF pulse in Chiari malformation patients with and without syringomyelia. The timing of the CSF pulse relative to the arterial pulse has been implicated in syrinx development using computational modeling. Previous studies have investigated features of the CSF pulse of patients with Chiari malformation versus healthy participants, but this is the first study to compare Chiari patients with and without syringomyelia. High temporal resolution cinephase contrast MRI was used to measure the CSF velocity time profile gated to the cardiac cycle. The systolic CSF flush was significantly faster and occurred significantly earlier in the cardiac cycle in patients without syringomyelia than in patients with syringomyelia. The earlier timing and faster CSF flow into the spinal canal may underlie the development of syringomyelia in Chiari malformation. Thank you for listening. Journal of Neurosurgery Publishing Group podcasts are contained in the American Association of Neurological Surgeons iTunes U site. Sign up in iTunes for our podcasts and additional content, including video content and podcasts from the AANS, all updated continuously. You can also follow the Journal of Neurosurgery Publishing Group on Twitter and now also on Facebook. To read articles published this week in any of our journals or to listen to more podcasts, please visit us at www.thejns.org.